All right. First of all, thank you so much, church, for paying my way to Honduras again this year. It is greatly appreciated. After a very long day on Saturday, because our flight left at like 5:30 from Indianapolis. Anyway, we weren't really looking forward to the customs in Honduras. With everything that has to happen, all of our organization and putting everything into a spreadsheet, it's always a little iffy about what they'll do whenever we get there. But this year was extremely smooth. We did not have to wait an entirely long time like we did in September. They did open our medication suitcases and went through them and looked at expiration dates. But when you have like 30 people flying in from the States and everybody has a medication suitcase, then that can be a long process, and I think they got tired of it. But in addition to that, Brother Melton does a lot of work prior to, including working with a lawyer to get other paperwork completed so that it is a very smooth transition into the country. I did not get an exact count. I haven't seen the big group picture, but I think we had 45 or 50 people going out each day, and that includes national pastors, children's workers, the triage nurses, Red Cross helpers, and a dentist that would check the kids' teeth and give fluoride treatments, including our two doctors, a physician's assistant, seven nurses, eight translators, and a doctor's assistant, because one of the doctors is Honduran. He doesn't need a translator, but one of the Melton boys does help him with writing things down, and he was allowed him to do some translating just for the fun of it. We also had a pharmacist and his two assistants, plus all of the other people that go along and help with making the goodie bags, making our lunches, the bouncers that stand at the door, and more about them later. I will not pronounce these words right, and so this is a little bit intimidating since this is the first time I've had to do one of these with Spanish speakers sitting here, very good Spanish speakers sitting here. On Monday, we went to Lagunetas, I think is how I would pronounce that one, and saw 310 people, and I did not get a number of how many people were saved, but I think it was like 21. On Tuesday, we went to Las Rosas and saw 400 people. 69 people were saved and 8 children, and immediately those people wanted the mission to put a church in their city, in their town. And so the national pastors are working on that to get a church established in Las Rosas. On Wednesday, we went to Agua de las Piedras, saw 346 people. And on Thursday, we went to La Victoria, 362 people seen, 47 adults saved and 5 children. And La Victoria, which means the victory, has an amazing story to tell. Daniel prays over each community that we go to. And he was feeling kind of, he was having some trouble getting it organized in La Victoria. But he just felt very strongly that we needed to go there, and he didn't know why. Well, one of the young ladies that came in to be seen was actually seen by Ashley Quesenberry. She had, I think, 3 little girls with her. Afterwards, they actually had to take her to her home. I'm hoping that either a video will be posted at some point of Rodney Loper telling his story, or if he'll write it up in a story form. But long story short, they were able, Daniel and Rodney Loper and the national pastors were able to go with her and pray her through her demon possession, demon being cast out. The story is very powerful, gives you chills sitting and listening to it. Something I've never experienced, something I've never really even heard about to that degree. And it's a very powerful story to think that, and to think that it happened in a town called The Victory. It's pretty amazing. Thursday, after we got done with our clinic, which we got done fairly early, we went back to the mission compound and saw about 76 people that are the mission workers, employees, and their families. So that was close to 1,500 people seen and around 200 people that were saved over the 4 days. This trip was a very unique one. It was cool for the majority of the time, like sweatshirt wearing, weather wearing cool. That does not happen in Honduras on our missions trips. Usually we are sweltering in concrete churches that probably register about 110 degrees inside the church. At least that's what it feels like. And we weren't really complaining, but I felt like the new ones weren't getting the entire experience. The first several days were filled with clouds and random rain showers. We had downpours during our first two clinic days. But overall, the weather was amazing, and the roads weren't terrible. They did get very soupy, and it looked like we had gone muddy in our vehicles, but it wasn't too bad. My translator was Kayla Rice, and if her name might sound familiar to you. She had spent some time with the Shapers in Guatemala several years ago, and she is currently working at Awake Cafe in Detroit. She was really looking forward to this trip. She was able to meet the man, Freddie, who does the coffee that Awake Cafe sells. That was kind of a neat experience for her. She did a great job, even though this was her first time to translate anything medical. Those of you who are medical know that English medical is basically a whole nother language. Same thing for Spanish medical. It's a whole nother language. We stationed ourselves near Susanna Shuey. She was the physician's assistant and her translator, and we, both of us, leaned on them a lot throughout the week for help with the Spanish translations and just with medical questions. God was helped us so much this week, from making sure that our Tylenol supply didn't run out. I think maybe there was about 10 bottles, like small bottles, left at the end of the week, and we take a lot of Tylenol, to guiding Daniel to what communities we needed to go to. So back to when I said I would mention the bouncers later. You never really know someone until you spend a week with them on the mission field. Who knows Rodney Loper, president, Dr. President Rodney Loper? Keith and Dr. President Rodney Loper, because that's what I called him, were our bouncers at the door. So the bouncers at the door, they have to stand there and keep everybody out until the threat to bring somebody in. Because the national people, they'll just walk in out of line or whatever. So they would kind of do crowd control. Well, there were four of us nurses are young single nurses, and our translators are, some of them are single, but they took it upon themselves to bring us the eligible men. So that's why you never really know somebody. They saw a whole other side of Dr. President Rodney Loper this week than I thought I ever would. But we had a great time. We had great teenagers that were on our trip this week. Helped out with loading and unloading the truck, because we had to do that every day with the supply truck. In the afternoons, the weather was so nice, we were able to like stay outside. One afternoon, they put together a kickball game. And Dr. Dave Boardman got in on that, and so did Brother Loper and a bunch of the teens. And then a couple of the local people right there, too. We had amazing food. I talk about the food a lot. I love all the fresh fruit that we can enjoy, and the local ladies there, they cook for us. And our morning devotion times, Brother Loper did those Monday through Friday. He spoke on Sunday for our Sunday morning service, and then he did the morning devotion times. And those were very encouraging and uplifting and a help to us to keep God first, no matter what we do, and an encouragement to us as we started our day in ministering to other people. probably one of the best things for me this week was that I mentioned that Kayla was the first time for her to translate anything medical, so it was slower than what I had had before. And that was perfectly fine. I felt like I was able to connect more with the patients this year. And because of that, I was able to take the time to like get a picture with them and then write their names down as well. And one of the families that really stuck out to me was a 61-year-old man, Francisco. He's taking care of 3 kids. It's kind of hard to get the whole story, but from what Kayla said, his wife had left him, and he was taking care of these 3 kids, under 10 and under. All 3 of them had dental issues, and he was trying his best to see to them. But the oldest kid, the boy, he was 10 years old, and even Francisco was looking to him for like help and making sure that he understood what all the medicines were for and everything. It's one of those heart-wrenching situations. You just want to love on them so much. And then another man, whose name was also Francisco, he's in his 40s, and he'd been in a car accident, has back problems because of it, and is having a very difficult time working, and it's leading to depression. What can we do? We have Tylenol and Tums, basically. We can't really treat depression. But we were able to pray with them and just trust that God can help them in those situations and give them encouragement. And then we have someone that comes in like Antonio, 14 years old, and he wasn't any taller than this. With the biggest smile on his face, he couldn't read. He might be able to read. He couldn't talk. And he has very poor hearing. But instantly, before we could hardly even say hello, he was giving us hugs. He was just so happy to be there. Grinned real big when I gave him a stuffed animal. Grinned real big when I gave him a drawstring, like one of those cinch backpacks. And loved it that we got our picture with him. And then later his parents came in and I understood why he was this tall. Because Dr. Dave Boardman is not tall, and they came up to hear on him. They were both very short. But they were the most thankful and happy people. Even though they probably had so many problems, they were very grateful. All the patients, everybody that we saw, thank us when they leave, tell us to have a safe trip, thank us for coming. The people that Daniel works with to organize each location would get up at the end and tell us thank you for coming to their community and how much we've been a blessing to them. And we walk away, everybody. On Thursday night, we sit in a big circle in the dining room hall there on the compound and talk about the week. And just about everybody can state the fact that we go there to try to be a blessing to them. But we walk away being more blessed. Seeing how grateful they are for the little things. A bag of Tylenol. A bottle of Tums, capsules, pills, whatever. And we walk away more blessed and grateful for what we have and the accessibility that we have to medical care, but being aware of how, even though their circumstances are not like ours, they don't seem to be as blessed as what we are, they are still very thankful. One man that we saw, he was 81 years old, and I asked him, I had Kayla ask him, you know, what's his secret to long life? And he said, God's grace. Several people, some of the other nurses said that their elderly patients, they asked them, what's their secret to long life? Because we had several that were in their 90s, and they said, it's God. So I'm very grateful for this opportunity that I get to go on these trips. And I'm hoping that I can get to go back. And I'll let Keith take over now. That was at 30. Etta made all of those aprons and bags, and the ladies loved them. they were just so excited when they saw what they were and what they were for. Their eyes lit up, and they would just, they pick one, and they would say that they were so pretty. Muy bonita, is what they would say. They loved them, and stuffed animals that I had taken from the Goodwill. Got them from the Goodwill, washed them up. They loved them. So, is there any questions? I guess I maybe should ask for questions. Nope, not a one, not a single phone number. I did not get a single phone number. I did not give out a single phone number either, except for the clinic. We gave the clinic phone number out a lot. All right, Keith.
She may not have a phone number, but it's not for life with me trying.
Good evening. It's good to be here. It's good to be in church. It's not good to be here. I would rather sit down there with you. I left here Monday the 21st, I think it was, a week before, a week and a few days before. Well, not a full week, I guess, just short of a week before Janae left. Your pastor volunteered to take me to the airport in Indianapolis, and he said what time I needed to be there and all that, and he would be at my house, and we need to be back on the road, 37, headed north, I guess it is, probably by 3:25 or 3:30. No problem. And my wife woke up at like 3:13 or something like that and said, "Your alarm didn't go off. Get out of bed." And she looked out the window, and there was the lights of Brother Ziegler's truck already in the driveway. So hit the ground running. I think I was out the door in 11 minutes or something like that. So made for a rough start, but we made it in plenty of time. And thank you, Pastor, for sacrificing your morning to help me out. Landed in Guatemala shortly after lunchtime on Monday and went directly to the lawyer's office because as a resident of Guatemala, you have to pay, as a foreign resident of Guatemala, you have to pay a yearly tax. And then when you pay that tax, then you can apply for permission to travel. And so if I did not receive this permission to travel, I would not have been able to leave on Friday afternoon when my flight was supposed to leave. So I went straight to his office on Monday, midday, gave him all of my documentation that he would need to get this tax paid and then get this other document received. Everything was going good until Tuesday afternoon. He called and said, "Oh, I have to have your actual national identification card. I can't just have the copy of it." So I told my maintenance man, the school's maintenance man, I said, "I don't have time to run, to drive 2.5-3 hours back into the city, the capital city, and give him this card. Will you do that?" And so about midday on Tuesday, he took off back to the city with my national ID card. So I didn't have to do that. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday were the 3 full days that I would be in Guatemala. And basically, my role is administrative, so it's oversight and support, basically, for the national people doing their job. I'm still the legal representative for the mission, therefore that makes me the legal representative of the school as well. So any legal official documentation has to be done, I have to sign it, or I have to make sure that it's done correctly and things like that. The school is doing good. We have 2 directors, one for the morning classes, one for the evening classes. In those countries, up through 6th grade, they call primary school, and that goes in the mornings. So if they're in-person classes, it's 7:15 till about 12:30. Afternoon classes is 7th grade and above, and that will be about 12:45 to 1 o'clock, starting until 6 o'clock at night. So same building, same property, and you have 2 schools, one in the morning, one in the evening. So we have 2 directors, one for the morning classes, one for the evening classes. We have a school board that's national. They're affiliated with our Holiness Church there. All of them are members of our Holiness Church. They were helped to be organized and appointed by the board of the national church. And so we have some good people there on the ground. They're just a little maybe scared. Maybe that's not the right word. Maybe intimidated, that may not be the right word either. to take control of this. The mission is still sending monthly support to help fund the school. And so, as is their culture, they're a little hesitant to make decisions because it'll affect how the money works. And for many, many years, the missionary made all financial decisions. And I have tried to tell them, we have this money set aside for the school. If you spend it unwisely, we will suffer. If you spend it wisely, we will prosper. And so help me make wise financial decisions. By helping me, that means you do it. And so they have started taking on some of that responsibility, a little bit more of the financial side. They're still a little scared, a little hesitant. Back in the day, they weren't even allowed to buy toilet paper or pens for the office or copy paper, things like that for the school without permission from the missionary. And I told them, why do I have to tell you when to go buy toilet paper? If you see there's a need, then go buy it. It's okay. And so that's a process of working through getting them up to the confidence level that I'm not going to be angry with them if they spend a little money. I've always told them, make your options, prioritize your options, and then make the best decision. And if you make the wrong decision, we'll figure out what we have to do to fix it. We'll apologize, and we'll make a better decision next time. I've tried to let them know that we're not going to hit them with a hammer or fire them the first time they make a mistake. God is helping them, and we're excited about the people that God has allowed us to have in leadership there, the people that God has placed in leadership, and we're thankful for them. I also did a lot of updates for the government. Every year they call it actualizar sus datos, and that's getting all of your legal address and your property names and your business names and your personal information all updated. And sometimes it's just you look through the list and say, yep, it's correct. And so for another year, then everything's okay. I haven't been there in 2022 yet, so I needed to get my information verified again. And so I spent a couple of days doing that. Now that process is all online. So you have to go through and figure out this whole new process online. And it took me and a couple of national people about one complete day, two parts of two different days, to get all that done. So I'm thankful for them understanding their stuff better than I do, and it still took us a full day. One other thing that I had to do while I was there is review some needed improvements and projects that need to be done, get our maintenance man to give me bids or quotes on what these projects would cost so that I can start presenting those to the mission and figuring out prioritizing those things for the needs of the school and figure out what's best for the long term of the school. Friday was my leave day, and we left early to make sure I could get to the lawyer's office and get all that paperwork in hand, hopefully before I got to, or I needed to get to the airport. So we headed out, and I got to the city, and I called him and I said, I'm in the city headed to your office. Do you have the paperwork? And he said, everything is here, ready and waiting. So thank the Lord I was able to leave on Friday. Friday afternoon, I flew out to Atlanta and stayed the night there. The school in Jalapa has around 120 students this year and 20 staff members. The 120 is down a little bit from the last 2 years. Last 2 years, it was closer to 130 students. But this is our third year going on all virtual learning. And that's stressful on the students probably more than anybody else. They're not used to staying at home after 3 years. They should be, I guess. But from the parents' point of view, is I'm homeschooling the kid and paying you to give me material. And so, excuse me, we have consistently lost some students, but God has helped us and helped us to maintain that number. Many of the private schools in Guatemala have lost over half of their student population through the pandemic, and we have lost about 10. Our number has went down about 10. And so we're thankful for the Lord keeping those numbers up. And we're looking forward to hopefully next year when we go back to full virtual, it will be elevated greatly. This year for the first quarter, they started the year on a hybrid system, they call it. And so part of the time the students are in the school, so there's not as many students. Part of the time they're at home on doing virtual. And they started the first week, and I think I testified about this, or Brother Ziegler announced it. They started the first week, and before the end of the first week, the COVID numbers went up, and so they canceled that and went back to virtual. I think they got 3 or 4 days of this hybrid system in before they canceled it. Well, they just messaged a couple days ago, I guess it was Friday, and said that their hybrid system has been approved again to start in the second quarter, and that will be mid to late March. They will be going back trying to do the in-person classes again. So pray that the Lord will help them as they make that transition, and that the Lord will keep the COVID numbers down. I've never understood their COVID numbers. Jalapa area probably has 100,000 people. And last week they said they had 5 new cases, so they're still under red. Well, you have 5 new cases and 100,000 people. That's not a very high percent. And so you would think it would at least be orange or yellow, and why not green? That's their ranking system, with red being the worst. I don't understand it. I'm not sure they do. But anyway, so we're trusting the Lord that he will help them to be able to do classes in person for the good of the students and for their future. Many students have suffered greatly. One of the government's things was that they didn't want anybody to fail. And so even didn't matter if they didn't come to class or whatever, you had, they call it recuperation. And the end of the year, you have a week of classes, and the students are supposed to be in these recuperation classes, and then they take a test at the end of recuperation. If they pass the test, then they pass the whole year. And so students aren't learning the proper material because of this situation, and it's not been good for the educational future of the school, of the nation, the country. So pray about that as well. It was a blessing to get to be there. It was a little harder emotionally than I thought it would be, going back to our home there without my wife and kids being there with me. But the Lord helped me. I made it just fine. I ate street food 2 times and didn't get sick, so I must not be too far removed from it. And I enjoyed my time there, and I thank the Lord for allowing me to go back. Thank you to the church for helping me to get to go to Honduras. I've gotten to go to Honduras. I think this would have been my 6th or 7th trip. I don't remember exactly. And most times I take somebody from Guatemala with me, whether it's just Kristen and Owen, or some translators from Guatemala. And this year I was there by myself, and so I missed having somebody from my family there. But it was a blessing again to get to be there helping Brother Daniel with the logistics. I tell him I'll do whatever you need, and sometimes I end up doing things that I don't want to do. And I tell him, well, whatever you need, brother. And so he knows that, and he enjoys getting to make me do things that I don't want to do. And we have a lot of fun together. He's a good friend. My job is the bouncer. One of the first years I went, Daniel said, just come and we'll find something for you to do. And so I was just kind of standing around, and at the front door when the people are leaving, they have a vitamins table. So I was just kind of standing around watching things happen, and people kept coming in and meandering around and looking around and asking for things and just kind of congesting the area. So I told Daniel, can I just shoo these people out and stand in the door and keep order? And he said, absolutely, let's do that. And so that's what I did that first year. And the next year came back, and Daniel had one of the team members as the bouncer. And he said, just find something else to do. Just look around. You'll be okay. Just find something to do. And about lunchtime, Daniel came to me and he said, the bouncer fell through. Would you go back to the door? So my invented job became a job. And last year, Brother Ken White got to help me with that. That was enjoyable. We got to stand and talk and tell stories and occasionally move some people. I mean, you know. But this year, the Lord knows what's going to come down the road long before we ever see it coming. And every single place we were at this year, we needed 2 bouncers. there was small school rooms, and so we had 10 providers, and so we have part of the group over here and part of the group over there, and I can't be both places at once, and so we needed somebody to stand in the other door. One church where triage was set up was at the front door, but the best place for the people to enter was at the back door. So then we had to have enough bouncers to guard the front door so people weren't coming in the front door and make sure the people inside were going out the front door. And it was interesting that God gave me a good helper when we needed it. Brother Rodney took it by the job, and it was so funny to hear him trying to talk to the people. I was teasing him that if he was there another week, he'd be completely fluent in Spanish, because he'd say, "How do you say come?" And we'd say, "Venga." And he'd say, I don't know, some English version of that. And he'd go over to the people and say, "Venga." And he'd start waving at him, and he'd get him in there. He wasn't scared to try. And some of our translators, they were sitting there. Some of our people that can speak Spanish were sitting there. And every time he would say that, they would cover their ears and shake their head and laugh. But the national people loved it. And they were having a good time with him, and he was a great help. One of the funniest things on Brother Loper, the Hispanic Latin people, they don't respect the line. And so if you're in line and you leave more than about a foot and a half between you and the person, maybe even just a foot between you and the person in front of you, they're going to just be walking by, and they're going to step in line in front of you. It works that way on the road, too. If you're not tailgating, there's room for at least two cars in there. And so Brother Loper was out watching the line, and we have numbers every paper. It's about this size, and every paper has their information on it. And up here in the corner is a number. So when they go through triage, that 1, 2, 3, and all the way up. So we try to go by numbers because we know they cut the line. So we had been organizing numbers, and Brother Loper looked up, and some teenage guy sat down in the first chair. So Brother Loper went back to his paper and started looking and counting, and he pointed at the number and he went and he sent the kid to the back of the line without ever talking to him. And those people started laughing, and when they laughed, they were screaming like "Woo!" like that loudly. And it was the biggest commotion we heard all week long, was everybody else laughing at that poor teenager that thought he was going to cut the line. And Brother Loper, with no Spanish, caught him and sent him away. It was wonderful. Two things that stood out to me. The level of poverty this year, it's like that every year, but probably being back in the States for these last 3 months has closed my eyes or scaled my eyes back a little bit to the level of poverty that is prevalent in those countries. At least two of the places that we went to, the only water they had is rainwater. So they pray for rain just to have water to bathe, to drink, to wash, to cook. And then the other thing that stood out to me, and Janae mentioned this a little bit already, was their contentment and their gratitude. They're not complaining about their circumstances. Dr. Dave had a lady come in, and she had a goiter, and a goiter is an overgrowth of the of your thyroid gland because it's not producing enough thyroid hormone. If you're in medical, you understand that better than I do. So her goiter comes out past her chin on both sides, past her chin in the front, and it's all the way down to her collarbones sticking out. And so when we have a patient like that, as the bouncer, we'll hold them back or we'll cut the line for them to make sure that they see what we would deem the specialist. We don't want to give a complicated case to an OB nurse when it's a crazy fracture of an arm that didn't heal correctly. Some of those things you want to do right by the patient, as well as the poor nurse, that she's not going to have any idea of what to do in that situation. So we took this lady to Dr. Dave, and he was like, "Okay, here we go. Let's hear this story. I'm excited to hear this. This is going to be a good one." And her complaint was eardrops, right? She wanted eardrops because she wasn't hearing good, or she had too much earwax or something. So Dr. Dave looked in her ears and gave her medicine and okay, you know, how did she have any pain? Give her some Tylenol. It goes through this thing, and she's ready to leave. And Dr. Day finally says, tell me about this. And she says, oh, I've had that for 50 years. I can't afford the medicine. I can't afford the treatment. So it's just part of my life. I thought, wow, what contentment. Going through life with this huge tumor basically on your neck, and you're worried about earwax. What a lesson for us. We're worried about so many things that are small. And she had a big thing that didn't worry her too much. Some of my highlights, as always, as usual, the babies. As the bouncer, I get the privilege to bring everybody in. And so when I get to a young mother or a young family that has a baby, I take their papers, I get all their papers and stack them all up so I make sure I know how many people I'm bringing in. And then the second thing I do is I take the baby. And I get to carry the baby into the building, and then all the nurses are trying to get rid of their patients real quickly so they can get me to bring the baby to their table. Another highlight, and Janae already mentioned this, was the devotionals in the morning with Brother Loper. Short, sweet, but there was meat there to chew on. I enjoyed those every morning, and challenging in about 3 minutes. Man, there are some preachers that could really learn from that. None of them in this church. None of them in this church, Pastor. When I was a teenager, I didn't have much sense, and I told my dad one time, I said, Dad, if you had studied more, you wouldn't preach so long. The other highlight for me from the week was the lady that got saved in La Victoria that Janae talked about. She gave you some rough details. I'll give you a few more. Again, as the bouncer, we're standing outside of the rooms. Janae and the nurses and the doctors are inside rooms, so we're standing out. And when those people start praying, they're not just... Then if you have a puppy that you let outside and it comes back to the door and it scratches the door, I feel like sometimes when we pray, we go to God and we scratch the door. And these people aren't scratching. Pastor Amaldo and his wife, Eddie, and the other pastor, David, that was there, they are beating the hinges off the heaven's door. And immediately when that starts, you know something's going on. Because normally they're preaching like that, not praying like that. We saw just under 1,500 people, and over 200 people got saved. The question was, how many of our churches have 200 people saved in a year or in a decade? And we saw 200 people come to Christ in a week. They're preaching the doors off of heaven, and here they were praying the doors off of heaven, and I was wondering what was going on. And all of a sudden it stopped, and I walked by the little room where it was coming, and I looked in the door, and there's a lady laying on the floor in a funny position, and her hands are out, and her head is just flopping. And somebody said, well, was she having a seizure? You sure it wasn't a seizure? I said, no, you didn't have to see more than a glance to know it was something more severe than a seizure. We got word just a little bit later that she was possessed, and I was out front again, and I saw Brother Daniel and the pastor trying to help her walk out of that room. They decided to get her out of that room and take her to the church and let her pray in the church, which was just a block down the road. And as they're trying to carry her out of this room, she's flailing and flopping. And they said at one point the demon changed to lead. They literally could not carry her. They had to put her down. And they took her to the church. And the pastor said, no, this is not good enough. After praying with her down there for an hour, on the way out the gate of the school, Brother Daniel called Brother Loper and said, come with me. And so Brother Loper and Brother Daniel and the pastors went down there. They went to the church, and about an hour later, they went down to this lady's house and prayed. And she threw up 5 times. Every time she threw up, the national people said that was another demon that she was getting rid of. She would never look at the pastor in the eye. She would always, her eyes were rolled back in her head. She would never, if she tried to look up, she couldn't look. She wouldn't talk except for one little time in the middle. She talked a little bit. And it was interesting, as they were praying, I wasn't there, so I'm just repeating the stories that were told. But they asked her, where is the demon? And she pointed at her dad and said he had a demon as well. And so they stopped praying for her, went in the other room and prayed over him. He vomited as well. And they took his wallet. He had demonic spiritual stuff in his wallet. They started a fire, started burning things. And before they left, the dad had prayed to be saved as well. The lady, they went back to continue praying with her. And I don't remember where in the 5 vomiting sessions or the 5 demons that she had, they stopped. They came back to her. And after what they felt like was the last one, they let her sit for about 5 minutes. And the pastor got in front of her, and she looked up at him. Her eyes came up out of her head, and he said, now would you like to pray to receive Jesus into your heart? And she said, yes. She prayed and started the process of restoration with her family almost immediately. She was hugging her father, who was probably the one that got her started down that trail. She was hugging her children, who had basically didn't want anything to do with her anymore because she wasn't tending to them. She wasn't caring for them. She wasn't taking care of them the way they needed to be taken care of. She had an older child, an older boy, that said he hated his mom. And they have a picture of him hugging his mom. When they were telling that story, 2 thoughts came to my mind. We wrestle not against flesh and blood. And the other one was, she was seated, clothed, and in her right mind. Here in the States, we don't deal with things like that. I don't know why, but we don't have to deal with them. We don't see them. There was another lady at Las Rosas that they prayed with and didn't get anywhere. I asked Brother Daniel on the way home. I messaged him. I forgot to ask him when I was there. I said, what happened to the other lady? And they said she didn't get through. They weren't able to pray with her as long as they needed to or get the situation figured out or whatever. But they were going back this next week to pray with the lady in that second village that we went to. And she was demon-possessed as well. I've been there many years. I don't know, 6 or 7 years, whatever it was. And I've never seen that before. Daniel's been in Honduras for 15, 17 years, something like that. He said he's never seen that before. He's never been in contact with that like that. But it's just powerful. Daniel said in his testimony that Thursday night that Janae talked about, he said, I never felt scared. I never felt threatened. I never felt intimidated in the presence of those demons, because of the power of the God that we serve. Brother Rodney said he was walking down the trail, carrying this lady down this steep incline of a trail down to her hut on the hillside. And the thought that went through his head was, I want to be as close to Jesus at this time as I can. So often we come to those times in our lives, and it's an insurance policy, and we run to the adjuster to get the problem fixed. We run to Jesus to try to get closer right now. Well, there's no time for Brother Rodney to walk out of the school where we're giving out medicines to go to the church to pray with a demon-possessed lady to get closer to Christ. He's going into the battle. And folks, we're in a battle. The devil would like nothing more than to destroy you, God's best and God's brightest. One of Brother Loper's testimonies or his devotionals was about this beautiful ornamental tree that he had in Florida. And he had a young'un at home, I don't know, 3 or 4 years old still. And that little boy liked to climb up inside that tree, and it was, the leaves were all around the edge, so the inside was like a fort. And he told his boy, he said, "That's fine, you can play in there. Just don't break the branches, because if you break the branches, it'll leave a hole in this beautifully ornate tree." And he said he came home one day from the office, and there's this huge hole in the side of the tree. He got out and took off around the house. He said that boy was getting a whooping. There was just no way, two ways about it. And little boy came around the side of the house, all happy to see Dad, and he said, "Son, what happened to my tree? I told you not to break any branches." And he said, "But Daddy, I wanted to see you." He said he didn't get a whipping. And his analogy was, we need to break some branches that's obscuring our view. We need to get rid of the things in our life that's standing between us and seeing our Savior. It was powerful to me. It was a privilege to get to be there. I love it every year. Thank you again for allowing me to go, making it possible for me to get to be there. It was even good getting to be with Janae. I was going to ask for questions, but Janae already did for her. Do you have any questions for me, or did you think of something you wanted to ask Janae? Yes. Tuesday, we were at that place, one place. We were at one place for the clinic, and Daniel said, "Hey, I'm going to go check on the other village." And so I said, "Hey, Brother Loper, would you mind if I ran with him to check on the other village?" He said, "No, that's fine." And so I asked Kayla Melton to help stand in the other door doing the bouncer job while I ran with Daniel. And we went over to La Victoria because they had not been returning his calls. There's no cell service out there, so you call and leave a message, and the next time they go to town, then they call you. And so you get up close to the time, and you know you're not going to have time for them to get to town to return a call to confirm details. So Daniel said, "We're just going to drive over there." We got over there, and a lady from the church is now in charge because the pastor is in the hospital sick, and they said he'll probably die in the next week. It's not COVID. They don't know what it is. And Daniel said he truly thinks that in that area, the devil is fighting so hard that he has nearly killed the pastor because the pastor is encroaching on his territory. And so I never heard the pastor's name, did you? Anyway, he's the pastor at the church, the Emmanuel Church there in La Victoria. So if you think of him, pray for him as well. Anything else? Thanks again. God bless you.